The Pacers get absolutely embarrassed in Sacramento. Their most emotions in a game of the season. Sabonis against the Pacers, Haliburton and Hield in Sacramento against their former team. And the Pacers got run off the floor. What went wrong? How did this happen? And what all went in to such an emotional night? We'll get to all that today on the Locked On Pacers podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name is Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and SI. And today, lots to get to from the Pacers. Worst loss of the season by a mile. The Kings just embarrassed the Pacers. It wasn't even close. It was a full outclassing. The Pacers were up by like 2 points in the first couple minutes, and then the Kings were up 10 late in the first quarter, never looked back. It never got close again. It was in the 30. The lead was in the 30s at points in the fourth quarter. The Pacers never had their spirited moment that made it interesting like they have in some of their other bad losses. They got smoked. It was awful. We'll talk about what happened, how it happened, what the Pacers need to do better. And then, of course, with such an emotional game, I would like to chronicle everything that went into this night. And, you know, you can say it was a typical game. The players can say that. It wasn't. And I will go through everything that made this game between Haliburton and Hield playing against their former team in Sacramento and the fan reaction and how that impacted the game to Sabonis playing against the Pacers for the first time. We got to talk to him. I talked to him for the first time today since February when he was on the Pacers, right, when he was in Atlanta and got traded, like, on that trip. So lots of storylines from this game, but we'll start with the game itself, the thing to talk about, because the Pacers got completely embarrassed. And it's hard for me to think of a way that I would have been leading with the game instead of the emotions and the story that went into it, because this game was such a story game more than it was, you know, an on-the-court kind of game to me. I love those. But this game, the game is the story. The Pacers looked horrific, the worst they've looked all season by a mile, and quite frankly, the least like themselves they've looked all season, right? And it's easy to say that reactively, to say, oh, the Pacers aren't making shots. Their defense doesn't look good. This isn't like the Pacers, but they weren't playing the same way. It felt like they were, you know, only having one or two passes every possession, and they couldn't figure out the right defensive adjustments. And guys who are normally aggressive weren't necessarily aggressive, and guys who aren't normally aggressive were way too aggressive. Like, it was the wrong balance. It was just not the Pacers. And I get why they could be taken out of their game in a game like this, where there's booing every time one of your starting guards, Buddy Hield, touches the ball, and there's a standing ovation before the game, and none of the questions leading up to the game are about the game, and you got to dinner with guys you hung out with last season before, you know, all this stuff that made it different, sure, but the Pacers just never looked like themselves, and the Kings looked totally like themselves. So something was off with the Pacers. They took themselves out of it on both ends of the floor, right? 137 the Kings scored in this game. They were awesome. Quite frankly, they were awesome. 50% shooting from them. They didn't even shoot that well from three, but they didn't turn it over that much. They rebounded very well, and they scored extremely well at the rim. 56 points in the paint for the Sacramento Kings in this game. They just destroyed the Pacers. They couldn't defend them at all, right? Isaiah Jackson noted the defense as being a problem after the game, as, you know, one of the big things that changed this game. And, you know, the Pacers just never quite defended correctly. And a lot went wrong for them in this game, right? The Kings just ran away with it. They ran in transition, too. This is supposed to be the Pacers' thing, right? They want to get stops and run in transition. So the transition points in this game surely would favor them, right? Fast break points, Pacers 8, Kings 31. And you have to get stops to get in transition. The Kings' defense did much better in this game. So the things the Pacers want to do in a given game are score points in the paint, get into the paint so they can pass the ball around and make the life easier on themselves, and they want to run in transition because they have one of the best transition players in the NBA and a bunch of good shooters. And the Kings did those things extremely well. The Kings have a top-tier offense in the NBA. The Pacers did neither of those things well, and the Kings ran all over them all night long. And so that's part of what made this just not a very Pacers-y game, is that, you know, the Kings just did their game better. And that's what's so interesting about this, right? The Pacers couldn't keep up with the team. The Pacers have been faster than everybody, which has allowed them to go on these crazy runs where they can, you know, as Haliburton said, evaporate a 15-point lead in a blink. And they couldn't do that in this game because the Kings are able to keep up with anybody. They're just as quick. They've got just as good of a strategy, and they're spread pick and roll with Sabonis setting the screen or whoever it is. You know, a lot of the times it was Sabonis, although he didn't even have to play in the fourth quarter of this game. Or Casey Okpala at times, or Chimezie Metu, whoever's in at center, Rashawn Holmes, Alex Len played in garbage time. they can do the spread pick and roll really well, especially because they've got the shooters. Kevin Huerter has been shooting well. They got a couple threes from Keegan Murray, Malik Monk, you know, all these guys. They're really hard to defend. They really spread it out, and they've got the speed to make it damaging. And the Pacers really couldn't figure it out. Their defense was totally miserable. It was a blowout in the first half because they couldn't slow down the Kings enough to get it close. And the Pacers have had games where they go down in the first half, and you know, it's not a big deal. And in this game, they got it into single digits at times. In the second quarter, it was like 11, I think, at halftime, or 12. This is something that I thought the Pacers could come back from. In fact, I think they got it to 12 again in the third quarter, which is a big lead. But, you know, the Pacers came back from 17 down in the fourth two nights before this game. You know, you think with this team and the way they've played all year that they're going to find a way. But this game was just different, where they never looked like themselves. Their disposition, to use a Rick Carlisle word, wasn't the same. And they got their butts kicked. On the offensive end, too, you know, that's how they can make up for some of these bad defensive games. Pacers were up to 13th in defensive rating before this game, but that didn't matter in this game. They had to make up for it with their offense. The Kings scored 137, but it didn't matter. They couldn't do that either, right? The leaders for this team started slow. You know, Buddy Hield was dealing with Boo Birds, and Halliburton was getting targeted by the Kings defenders. We'll talk about that in a second. But when your leader starts slow, somebody else has to step up, or, you know, guys are going to respond to that. And Hield really finished the game pretty well. 17 points for Hield on 6 for 13 shooting. When he started 0 for 4 means he got 17 points on 6 for 9 shooting over the last, like, 35 minutes of the game. He recovered okay, but he started slow. Tyrese Haliburton was 4 for 13 with 9 points. You know, it was the second fewest shots he's made in a game all season. 9 points is the second fewest he's had in a game this season. And, you know, if that happens, right, they beat Toronto and Haliburton and I struggled. But they can't do that again. And it's hard to do that. And Turner was 2 for – they needed someone else to step up. Turner was 2 for 9. Nembhard was 3 for 7. Benedict Mathurin was 6 for 17, right? None of the normal cast of characters who shoot a lot, like Nesmith was 3 for 10. That's too many shots for him. You know, they didn't get enough from those guys to step up and meet the demand that they lose by not having good games from Haliburton and Hield. So their offense couldn't recover to overcome that poor defense. And they didn't get – you know, they didn't really get the role player step up that's been a thing for them – so much. Well, they did get one. Excuse me. Jalen Smith was fantastic. We'll talk about him in a second. But they didn't get enough makeup for how off those guys were, the guys who shoot most of the time for the Pacers, right? Hield, Haliburton, and Mathurin combined for 43 shots in this game. That's almost half of the Pacers' shot attempts in this game. When they combined to make, you know, 12 of those 43 shots, you're just never going to win. For a while, it looked like the Pacers' bench was holding them back. But in the end, it was those guys starting slow and never recovering that held the Pacers back. And credit the Kings. They did a good job defending Haliburton, and I'll talk about that in the second segment here. They did a lot of stuff very well, but you know, in general, this game, just the Pacers looked horrible. They couldn't do anything to break down this Kings defense that is pretty poor, and they could not, for the life of them, stop the Kings. Their offense is good. Not stopping the Kings is not a big deal. The over-under for this game in some sports books was over 240, and it smashed it. It went to 250, right? It was expected to be a game where the teams reach into the 120s, and the Kings did that no problem. But the Pacers couldn't. They couldn't get the offense going. And so, yes, their defense was awful, I think, but their offense was more concerning. They're an offensive team. Tyrese Haliburton is a special offensive player. Benedict Mathurin still scored 22 points. He just had an off shooting night and got to the line a bunch, but he had an off shooting night, right? And TJ McConnell was 2 for 6 despite having 10 assists. Like, they just took 20 of their assists were from two guys. Like, they were kind of moving the ball, but that kind of shows what I said earlier. They weren't moving it as much as normal. They weren't playing as random as they normally were. They didn't look like the Pacers. There's some other stuff I want to talk about from this game, including what Carlisle said after the game, how the Kings defended Haliburton, some other changes that happened, and then we'll get into the emotions and the story of this game and the weirdness of this day. But before we do that, let me talk to you guys about BetOnline.net. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, news, and analysis this season. You can get the latest odds and trends for every professional sports and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer and esports. They've got it all over at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fixed. They've got lines up for the NFL this week tonight. Patriots, Bills favored by 3.5. Big game there as the Bills look to recover a little bit from a sloppy win on Thanksgiving. All those lines and more over at betonline.net. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. Of course, make Locked On Kings your second listen today. I'm sure Matt George will be parading about the Kings getting off their losing streak and winning this game full of emotion. We'll get to those in a moment. But really quickly, a couple things happened that I want to talk about. One is, how the Kings defended Tyrese Haliburton. You know, Justin Dopierak with the Indy Star was talking to me during the game about, and he asked a lot of questions to the Pacers players about this as well, how the Kings were kind of double-teaming Haliburton a lot. And that seems like a strategy that makes sense. You know, he is so talented scoring and dribbling and getting around guys that doubling him and getting the ball out of his hand seems like a smart play. Now, what the difference between Haliburton and some other guys getting double-teamed is he's so smart at reading defenses and figuring out who the open man is that's double-teaming him that he can sometimes still punish that, right? The Pacers had a huge problem with Oladipo where he was not good at that playmaking part of getting double-teamed. Haliburton this season has at times picked apart those double-teams. In this game, he couldn't do it as well, right? He was kind of stuck at times. He couldn't find the open man. The Kings did a good job shrinking the floor. They X'd out well on shooters, right? They did all the stuff that makes it hard to do that. There is no open man when one guy can cover two guys or your spacing's off or your timing's off, right? So Haliburton can only do so much. He still had 10 assists. He played a nice passing game. But when his scoring wasn't there, they could cut that off really easily. Now, the other thing the Kings did well, this is something Malik Monk talked about after the game. De'Aaron Fox was guarding Haliburton a lot for the competitive portion of this game. They were really, really, really trying to make Tyrese Haliburton go left. You know, they said, I'll pull up the exact Malik Monk quote, but basically they never want him to go right because that's when he's at his most dangerous, right? He's great going right, but not as efficient going left. That's what Malik Monk said after the game. So that was a big part of this is that the Kings were able to force Haliburton to play a different game than he normally does. And he is normally so good at adjusting and figuring it out, but the way this game was, he couldn't do it in this game, right? That's why he had 9 points on 13 shots. He couldn't quite find his spots. And some of them were good looks, but you know, he was frustrated. He got a tech early in the game too. Like there was just a lot to it. And the Kings did a very good job defending him, and the Pacers never quite found another way to get him involved in some actions. Like, I don't think he played with TJ McConnell very much in this game, but sometimes those two point guard groups worked kind of well for him. But in this game, Haliburton didn't have it, and the defense was good there. Something else that happened after this game I thought was really fascinating is Carlisle, the way he talked after this game. And he's done this before where he sort of acts as the shield from a coaching perspective. He hadn't done that yet this season. I thought that was noteworthy. This is the first time this season Carlisle has blamed himself after a game. And I empathize with this more than I think fans do who call this an excuse. I think this makes sense. But he said, quote, "I think this one's on me. Just didn't have our guys ready, and we knew this was going to be a difficult game and environment. I didn't have them prepared for what was coming, so that's on me." And they played great, he said, referring to the Kings. I think that's interesting that he talked about having his team ready to play, whether that's knowing the scouting report or being mentally ready to go. Whatever he means by that, there's a million ways it could go. A coach's job is to prep his team to be ready every time. And this is the first game of the season. Not really. This is one of the games of the season with kind of changed emotional dynamics. And so as a coach, there's a lot to getting them ready to go. And I think that's sort of what he alluded to with the environment part of like, hey, the fans are going to be crazy. You know, you're going to be thinking about a little bit differently than you normally do before a game. Lock in, like focus, all of you, you know, and that's hard to do as a coach. And so with this game being a little different, I don't want to say anything for him, but I interpreted that to mean, you know, that's sort of a hurdle he had to get over as a coach, and that was difficult. And it's not something they really did well, was preparing the Pacers to play in that environment in this game, and they never, you know, adjusted and got settled in or anything like that. The Kings did a good job, like I said, defending them, taking them out of that stuff, but I thought that was noteworthy that Carlisle took the blame, hand up, and said, hey, this is on me. I didn't have the team prepared to play. A lot of times I think that's coach speak for, like, you know, he's shielding them from blame, but in this case, when the game is so unique, I understand a lot of people thinking, this is kind of my fault. You know, I wasn't myself. Now, Haliburton disagreed and said it was on him, right? I asked him the same question. He said, "I'd probably fault it on me more than him," referring to Rick. He said, "They gave us the right game plan, didn't execute the right way, didn't take care of the ball offensively. Shot selection was bad, didn't make shots," you know, and he said he had some bad turnovers as well, right? So to him, it was more that they were prepared well by the coach and they just didn't execute well. But there, to that end, you could also say the game plan was good, but if they're not mentally prepared to play correctly, they're not going to follow the game plan as well. So there's like a lot of air quotes on the word blame. It's not blame. It's just talking about the game. You know, there's a lot of people who thought that they were the reason the team didn't play well. I think everybody just could step up a little bit after a game like that. Some other notes from the game before we talk about the night, the emotions in general. One, Andrew Nembhard back in the starting five. I assumed that would happen after the game in LA. One, because he was good, and two, because he was starting before he got hurt, and it makes sense to ease him in once they know he's good to go. Start him. Neesmith makes more sense with the bench. Nembhard makes more sense with the starters. That's an easy decision. He was also not the greatest in this game, although shooting 42.9%, is good for the Pacers in this crummy game that they just had against the Kings. Note number two, Jalen Smith, great game. His second over 20-point game in 4 days. He was awesome against the Clippers. He was awesome again in this game. 22 points, 6 rebounds, 8 for 10 from the field. The only thing working for the Pacers in the second half, when they cut the game to 12, he was absolutely on fire. And then he gets elbowed in the face. He gets a face contusion. Not sure if it's a concussion or not. My guess would be no, but that's just a guess. But he was fantastic. And if he can keep going with this form of two really strong games in a week and they can continue to kind of work him in, I think that would be huge for him and this team going forward. But let's pivot. Let's talk about the emotions of this day, because I think that was a big part of the story of, one, how the game went, and two, how the Pacers played. So, yes, of course, the Pacers have to be better. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of stories in this game. And as a media person, sometimes I feel like I'm thrusting this on people. But, you know, these are humans who, you know, Tyrese Haliburton went from age 19, 20, right, through his drinking age up to 22 before getting traded in Sacramento. He loved it there. He talked about it all the time. He was stunned to be traded and thought he'd play his whole career there. And, you know, Sabonis went from this he played power forward with OKC and shot a bunch of threes. And then he went to Indiana and became this magnificent screener and rebounder and a two-time All-Star and blossomed into who he is today, right? He said that Indiana kind of helped him get to where he is now. The trade wouldn't happen without the Pacers making him that valuable. Buddy Hield's been in the league for 7 years. 5 of them were with the Kings, right? You know, this can be on me making it more than it is by asking all these questions to these guys about this game, but at the same time, they're humans. They think about all those seminal moments in their career and what these games mean to them. And it just becomes, it's a big deal. It's beyond the way it's talked about. These games are a huge deal to these players. And it's, I know that they all say something to the effect of, it's just another game. You know, I just want it to be a normal day. And I believe that they think that. I believe that they want it to be that way, but it can't be. It just can't be. You're a human. You have emotions. It's impossible not to think about that stuff when people you know are everywhere and stuff you know is everywhere versus your typical game. It's just different. And so I will segue into this with a luck of coincidence that I figured out right before the game. And that is that TJ McConnell, when he joined the Pacers, he had his first game back in Philly, right? And it's a little different. He didn't get traded, right? He signed with the Pacers, but he was loved by that Philly fan base. And his game in Philly, his first game back against the Sixers in Philly, was November 30th, 2019, exactly 3 years to the day before this Kings game. And I say that to say, I talked to him before the game. I thought he would provide a very interesting perspective because he's one of the few guys on this team that has had that kind of big go back, play somewhere you're loved kind of situation. And he said, you know, the goal for him was, and what the advice he provided to Tyrese and Buddy was, try not to make it anything different, right? Try to make this a normal day. Try to prep like it's a normal game. And I get that strategy. And I understand all the players said that, right? Tyrese Haliburton said, just the normal game. You know, I'm just looking at it as a game. I'm prepping as it's an everyday game. Sabonis said that. Hield said that to some effect, right? I think they all wanted that to be the case. And I think they said it because they were trying to make it that way, especially on game day. But also something TJ McConnell said is, as a human, it's hard to look past that, right? It's hard to look past the return element, the emotional element, soaking it all in at the time. And that's where I think that, yes, I think these guys want it to be a normal game. I think they show up and they say, I'm just going to play basketball and I'm going to win and I want the Pacers to do well. I understand all that. But I don't think you can look past it. I just don't think it's in human nature to be able to. And so that's why this game had so much emotion. One, because they cared a lot about it. And two, because there was a crowd of roaring fans, 17,500 people raining down on the two former Kings players, as well as supporting their own guy and Sabonis, that made this just such an awesome human element sort of game. And it was awesome. I don't think it's possible for them to be the way that they wanted to be because of how this game was set up to be, because of the now crossed paths of these two franchises, and because they're both playing pretty well right now. I saw a perfect tweet to describe this. I have no idea who it's from. I'm so sorry to the person who tweeted this. But the way this is now was tweeted like this. The Kings and Pacers trade is like the Kings are a farmer and the farmer has a Ferrari, but they need a tractor to run their farm. So they trade a Ferrari for the best tractor they can get. And so for the farmer, this is a great trade. You got exactly what you needed. Your farm's running better. Your operation's running better. That's fantastic. And the Ferrari is also awesome. And someone else now has it. And all anyone else can do who's not a farmer is say, oh, look at the Ferrari. Why did they trade that away? But the farmer got exactly what they wanted. And like, that's a really silly analogy, but it's like perfect for this. And both teams are getting a lot out of this trade. But because both teams are good, that just adds to this, because all season there's been a lot of talk of, you know, Sabonis plays well. Kings fans are thrilled about the deal. Halliburton plays well. The same kind of deal happens. So there was just a lot of emotion into this game. And I want to kind of take you through the day of all the stuff that happened, of all the stuff people said on both teams, and kind of my perspective on the emotions of the day. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard, behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts. Look, a lot went on in this day, and I got thrown off immediately. I had a great time in Sacramento. I'm still there. If you're seeing this recording, it's 4:53 a.m. Eastern time. Thankfully, that's only 1:53 here. This was wild. Like, I show up, I see Ronald Norwood like right outside the arena, right when I get there. And, you know, there's all these Kings fans there. They've got this branding of Turner versus Sabonis for the game preview up on the walls. Like, that was all cool and interesting and stuff. But, well, this all just got thrown for a loop right away, because we go to shoot around for the Kings, and I'm expecting to see Sabonis and talk to him a little bit, and we did. And I'll talk about that in a second. But imagine my surprise when the rapper 50 Cent is there. The PA announcer inadvertently called him 50 Cent before the game, which was hysterical. 50 Cent was there. So there you go. There's something to throw you off. His alcohol brand and the Kings partnered, and it was like his first game there. But that was wild. So he was there. He spoke to the Kings players in practice. That's what I should have known this day was going to be weird. Domas finally talks to us. It was awesome. That's the first time I've talked to him again since the trade. Again, he tried to talk about, you know, how it's just one game and how the team's benefited from both sides. But, you know, he was looking forward to going against some of his old pals and the guys that he was in the trenches with for years and years, and even in the case of McConnell, Batadze, and Turner, went to the postseason with, right? In the 2020 bubble season, he went to the playoffs with those guys. He didn't actually play in the playoffs. He played in the playoffs with Turner against the Celtics, but none of the rest of the team. But you know, I think for him, that's pretty cool. And I was talking to TJ. Domas said that he, you know, hung out with some Pacers staffers and got dinner with some players. TJ McConnell later told me that the dinner was Sabonis, TJ McConnell, and Chris Duarte. So there's not that many guys on the Pacers who were teammates with Sabonis last year, but those are the three that went out together for a meal. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, TJ and Domas and even Doug McDermott in the past bonded over wine. I think Sabonis lives close-ish to Napa. I don't know exactly where he lives, but Napa's not very far from Sacramento, so they got to joke about wine and all sorts of fun stuff like that. So that was Sabonis' part of the day. He tried to make it a normal game, but looking at his start of the game, he was so aggressive. I mean, he had two fouls in the first quarter that caused him to come out, but I'm pretty sure his stat line in the first, like, 6 minutes before he fouled the situation he couldn't even play anymore, he had like 7.6 rebounds and 4 assists in like 6 minutes, right? He was doing everything. His DHO game that Pacers fans know so well was making everything click for the Kings. He finished with 11, 10, and 7 in 23 minutes. I mean, he was just an absolute baller. So it was fun to talk to him before the game and hear what his relationships are like with the Pacers, right? He kind of talked about looking forward to going against Miles and how him and Miles are still pretty close. So I think that was all pretty cool. But I think for him, today's different, and he acknowledged this a little after the game as well, because it's in Sacramento, right? Like, obviously, he's going against his former team. There's something to be said about that and what it means for you. Like, I saw him after the game, you know, high fives, hugs with a lot of his former coaches and the teammates that he's close with. But when he plays in Indy and he sees all the staffers and the arena people and all the in the city and, you know, the fans can actually go crazy for him, I'm guessing there will be a tribute video. He was a two-time All-Star for the franchise. Like, that will be the game for him where all those emotions click like it did a little bit for the Kings guys on this day, but still an emotional game for him. First time going against the Pacers. I think he handled it very well. A lot of bigger media names in the house. This is just something in the notes for me, like two Athletic reporters, an ESPN guy, tons of TV media for Sacramento. Obviously a big game for that local market. So a huge media game kind of, you know, adds to the story, right? A little bit like this won't make a lot of sense to fans, but you know, if you're a player and your pregame media session is just you and one reporter, maybe two most of the time, and then you're getting ready for a game and all of a sudden there's like nine of them and three of them have ginormous cameras. You know, you just go, whoa, you know, what's going on? What's this? I'm not in LA, right? Like, that kind of stuff adds to these kind of games. And so that's why I added that down. And I knew this was going to be not a normal game, despite the cares of all the players when
pregame, Buddy Hield's warming up, and I think it was Doug Christie, but you know, a Kings assistant coach and some Kings staffers were joking with him about his new diamonds in his mouth and his jewelry and stuff that he's had in the past with the Kings. Like, as soon as that kind of stuff happens, when there's that much chatter across the court, like, guys know each other in the NBA. Everybody knows everybody, basically. So there's some talk before games. In fact, before every game, there's some talk. But the amount was more, right? Because they knew each other really well. And that's how you know it's not going to be a normal game. Like, Tyrese Haliburton's whole family was there. I saw his dad, like, pointing at everybody in the crowd with a Haliburton jersey on when they showed up. That was really cool. You know, they obviously know a lot of people in Sacramento, and all the emotions were just kind of like flowing out before the game in those sort of little moments that, again, they're little things. They don't mean a lot to the results of the game, but they just, every single little one adds up to like, okay, this is not a normal game, right? This is bigger than a normal regular season, your typical regular season game. And then the game actually starts and the starting five is introduced, and it was country night. There was a country singer at halftime for this game and all this stuff going on. It was country night, so they were playing this banjo song during Pacers player intros, and they stopped. They do Jalen Smith, Miles Turner, Andrew Nembhard, and then they stop the country music. They play sweeter, cooler music to introduce Haliburton and Hield. They do Haliburton first, which surprised me. I thought it would go in the opposite order. Big ovation, standing ovation. Some people stand up, a lot of cheering. A lot of people were wearing his jersey at this game. I posted the video, I think, on my Twitter account, and it wrote a piece about it. And then Buddy Hield got introduced, and he got booed a lot. A lot. That really surprised me. I mean, I get that he was frustrating for the franchise at times, and you know, the team with him didn't really win anything, but I was surprised the extent of the boos. And then I thought, oh, they got it out. Like, again, he didn't demand a trade. He didn't, like, burn bridges on the way out, but he got booed every touch, the whole game, four quarters. It's not like they wore out at some point. I thought that was fascinating. So Buddy Hield got booed the entire game. You're telling me a guy getting booed the whole game isn't going to play a little differently? Buddy Hield was super aggressive at times this game after missing his first four shots, right? Like, that totally changes the way this game went. And so the fan involvement was higher than any game I've been at in non-playoff game that I can remember. I mean, there's been a couple, I'm sure, that it's higher than that, but it was way up there. It was fascinating to see. Neither of them played particularly well, Hield and Haliburton, that is. Domas was good. So I think there was a crowd factor in this game, especially more so than other games, which was really interesting to see. Post-game, then, is the next part where the emotions kind of come out. And Haliburton kind of is like, he's not over the questions, but I think he's, you know, he got asked about like the culture shift in Sacramento, and he was talking about how, you know, he feels like some of the questions are ignited by his answers, and he's just kind of sick of talking about the trade. And I can't blame him. You know, he gets asked about it a lot, and his answers get taken out of context, which is how that kind of stuff goes. And from his seat, he's just answering the question asked him. Right? He doesn't want to be rude, he said, to media people. I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Tyrese, if you somehow are hearing this. But at the same time, it has to be frustrating, especially after a loss, to be asked kind of questions like that and all that sort of stuff. So fascinating to hear him talk that way. And fascinating to see all the emotions play out on the court, right? Where these guys show up and they try their hardest to ignore what the situation is and call it a normal game, but it wasn't. It totally wasn't. It affected the game play for sure. And the Pacers lost. They got completely embarrassed. It was their worst game of the season. I think Friday is now a very important game for them, right? They are an Andrew Nembhard miracle away from a three-game losing streak on the road where they got smoked in two of them. You know, if they can come out in Utah and play a good game and show that, you know, everything's right in Pacerland, I think that would go a long way for this team. We'll, of course, have coverage of that here on Locked On Pacers. But tomorrow, Kevin Bowen's going to join us. We're talking about the Pacers at the quarter season mark. Can you believe we're at the quarter season mark for this Pacers team? Really, we're past it by one half of basketball. So Kevin Bowen from ESPN 1070, the fan's going to join us. Will be super fun. Hope you guys will enjoy that. Till then, everybody have a great day. We will see you soon.